that's tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, True History from the Cavalcade of America, and right now, Secret Missions, based on the works of Ellis M. Zacharias, who was the deputy chief of the Office of Naval Intelligence during the Second World War, and the series was based on the book he released, and it ran on Mutual Radio from July 18th of 1948 through October of 1949. This episode from March 6th of that year, in their final season, the story of a Czechoslovakian girl who was rescued from behind the Iron Curtain and will actually hear her within the broadcast. It's Secret Missions.
The next voice you hear will not be that of a professional radio actor. It is the actual voice of a refugee who just escaped from behind the Iron Curtain and is standing at our microphone now to bring you her story.
They call me Mila Slobodova. That is not my real name. I cannot reveal my name publicly for obvious reasons. My family believes that I am dead. But I have lived to reach the United States and to tell my story. It is my own true story, the story of thousands like me who have tried to escape from the Soviet Union or from Soviet-dominated countries. They call me Mila Svobodova. This is my story.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Secret Missions, dedicated to the officers and personnel of the Intelligence Organization of the United States Navy. Secret Missions, based on the accounts and experiences of Admiral Ellis M. Zacharias, wartime deputy chief of the ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence. Admiral Zacharias.
The voice of the young woman you heard when this broadcast began speaks for the thousands of men, women, and even children who can no longer endure the total blackout of civil liberties in the countries of their birth. 24 hours of every day, all along Europe's east-west frontier, men and women are migrating in huge numbers. From Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, they are sneaking across heavily guarded borders in search of freedom at any cost. Using the authentic example of a single case, Secret Missions tonight reenacts this drama. The young woman, heroine of this episode, stands in our studio and will talk to you personally at the end of tonight's program. But first, we shall hear from a man whom I shall call Commander Griffith. What was your mission, Commander?
To interrogate the young woman we call Mila Svoboda, sir. To reconstruct the full story of her escape from behind the Iron Curtain on the basis of her detailed testimony.
This is Jack Farron, your announcer. During the dramatic portion of this broadcast, the role of Mila Svoboda will be played by a professional actress. However, at the conclusion of this program, you will again meet the woman known as Mila in person at our Secret Missions microphone. In our story tonight, the names are fictitious, but the events are real.
Just a door knock. In the democracies of the West, a neighbor to borrow sugar, perhaps. Or a magazine salesman. At worst, a bill collector. Just a door knock. But in certain countries of Europe, it may mean the smashing of a life pattern. The taking of the life itself. It may mean the secret political police. Depending upon the nation, it may be the MVD, the MBG, the AVH, or the OBZ. Often the knock is the first step on the road to the rig trial, the concentration camp, the firing squad. We are in such a country. It is the winter of 1948. We are in Prague, Czechoslovakia. We are at the home of Mila Svoboda. Just a door knock.
Yes?
Mila Svoboda?
I'm Mila Svoboda.
I'm Mr. Salek. May I come in?
What is it?
Political police.
Come in.
Well, a lovely apartment, Mila. Mind if I sit down?
Go on.
Rather cool today, don't you think? On the way here, I was saying to
myself...
What
did you want, Mr. Halleck?
We take a very keen interest in the young people of our city, Mila. We follow their activities rather closely.
What did you want?
You attended a party recently at the American Embassy.
That is permitted.
Oh, yes, certainly. We encourage it, in fact. At the party, Mila, you apparently took a liking to a young American officer. What is his name? Oh, yes, Saunders, Bill Saunders. Fine chap, clean-cut, bright, charming. I believe the young man also found you most attractive.
I've done nothing, Mr. Halleck. I do not understand why you have come here.
Well, Mila, we would like your cooperation. You can be very helpful to us.
I'm afraid I would rather not be concerned with political matters.
In this state, every citizen is concerned with political matters. It is a very simple task we have chosen for you, Mila.
Is it?
Saunders has access to information. It should not be difficult for you to learn certain facts. When the diplomatic pouch leaves the American embassy, who some of their undercover agents are...
I do not know anything about such things.
I do.
You are wasting your time, Mr. Halleck. I am not interested.
We take a rather direct attitude toward citizens who will not cooperate, Mila.
I will not spy for you. And how Bill and I feel about each other is none of your business. I will not use him. I will not betray him. Please leave me alone.
Mila, you see these papers? You know what they are?
No, of course not.
This is your dossier. Our police file about you.
How can you have a file about me? I'm perfectly innocent of any charges you may bring against me.
There is a statement in here that you visited your brother, a colonel in our army, at his barracks. You then met the American officer. Of course, we know that you're innocent. But would the state prosecutor...
What do you mean?
Isn't it possible that the state prosecutor might believe that you had secured military secrets from your brother and passed them on to the American officer?
How ridiculous.
Couldn't the state prosecutor prove that you're anti-Czech, that you have placed yourself outside of the new workers' community, that you are an enemy of the state? That you're a spy.
He can prove whatever he likes, but it is not true.
Mila, you do not live in the old Czechoslovakia. Times have changed. You must adjust yourself to the new way of life. Or you will be sensible, eh? Next time you are with your romantic young man, you will ask him...
I will ask him nothing.
I am sorry you have chosen this attitude. We have just one way of dealing with citizens who do not cooperate. Think about it, Mila.
Mila.
Yes, dear?
I was just wondering.
What, darling?
Is it always this way? I mean, falling in love being so wonderful and yet... not making any sense.
I suppose so.
All my life, I kept thinking I would meet some girl back in the States. It would be a girl from my hometown. There'd be a wedding at the church. We'd drive off on our honeymoon in a car I hadn't finished paying for. We'd buy a little house, like in the magazine ads. I'd have a job at the bank or as a salesman. I thought I had it all figured out.
Sorry, dear.
Oh, of course not, Angel. It's just that I've realized that it's true about falling in love being something that happens just when you don't expect it. Just in the last spot on earth you'd think it would be. Well, look at us. I'm a million miles from home in a strange country, and I adore a girl I hadn't met or even heard of until a few weeks ago.
Will it work out, Bill? Will it be all right?
Oh, of course, it'll be wonderful. You want to talk about our plans, darling?
Well...
we'll go back to the States. I want you to see them. There's a better life there that I want to share with you. What's wrong, Mila? You look worried.
Nothing. Go on.
I'll arrange to be reassigned. We'll arrange to get you out of Czechoslovakia.
Then we...
what's bothering you, darling? Mila, something's wrong. You won't tell me what it is. We mustn't start together with lies and secrets. You don't want to marry me, is that it?
Oh, no, Bill, that isn't it. There's nothing in the world that means more to me than going away with you.
Then what is it?
It isn't fair. You wait all your life for something, and then they take it away from you.
Mila, you've got to tell me.
No, not now, Bill. Later. Tonight, perhaps. Tell me more about your plans for us. About what we would have done.
Why do you speak about us as though it were all over? As though we were dead?
I don't want to tell you now, Bill. Not now. Just tell me how much you love me and kiss me. Give me this day, would you? We may lose all the others.
Lieutenant Saunders.
Yes, Commander?
Here's a letter addressed to you. A little boy who lives next door to Miss Swoboda brought it a few minutes ago.
Let me see it.
Easy, boy, easy.
Yeah, love. I would never go to the States. I am happy here in Czechoslovakia. You are an American. I am a citizen of the new Czech state. Yours is a decaying country. My country is on the road to progress. I have gone away. I do not want you to look for me, Mila. I don't believe it.
Maybe not, but what can you do?
I'll find Mila, so help me, I'll find her.
The search began. The long, heartbreaking search, so familiar to countless Europeans. The search for the lost face, the remembered voice, the person known so intimately who disappeared without trace. In the night, the car comes. In the night, there's a knock at the door. The sudden, frightened look of Amila. The grim, quiet talk and the flickering light of the doorway. The luggage seized. The arm on her shoulder. Then the roar of the car's motors and the red taillights disappearing at the corner. And the silence of the empty house. This is the picture haunting Bill Saunders as he visits the Czech Foreign Office, the Ministry of the Interior, the headquarters of the secret police. But he receives only one answer.
We are very sorry, Mr. Saunders. We do not have any idea of what has become of Mila Svoboda. We will make inquiries. It may be weeks or months.
This is the picture haunting Bill Saunders as he sits in his room at the Wilson Hotel. He telephoned room service. The waiter had brought his dinner.
Your dinner, Mr. Saunders.
Set it up right there, waiter, please.
Certainly. I brought the beautiful recording, Mr. Saunders. Would you care for music with your dinner? I will put it on the phonograph.
No, I don't want to hear any music.
It's Rudolf Walter directing the Vienna Philharmonic.
I don't care who it is.
Oh, here, listen. There may be microphones hidden in this room.
Who are you? What's the idea?
Remember May 10th, 1945?
Yes?
The day you entered Pilsen, you came in a jeep. We helped you.
Oh, wait. I know. You were a leader of the underground. Your name is Franischek.
That's right.
How the devil are you? I didn't recognize
you. Hello, Bill. Wonderful to see you again.
Do you know how many times I've wondered whatever became of you? Are you a waiter here?
No. I had to see you. I arranged it with a regular waiter. There is a new underground, Bill. We have a secret police again. We have despotism again. So we fight back again. You are looking for Mila.
You know about that?
Of course. She was arrested.
I thought so.
She was arrested on a trumped-up charge.
Of all
the letter she wrote to you was a fake. She was forced to write it. They gave her an overdose of Benzedrine, then a dose of morphine. You know what that can do to you.
But dirty.
She's at the St. Bartholomew prison. And we can get her out.
You can what?
I said we can get her out.
What do you want me to do? How do we start?
Honey, you can help later, after she is out of the prison. We can get her out. But the problem is to sneak her across the border. She must somehow get across the Danube into Austria.
That can be done, too. I know how.
Really?
Look, it works like this.
Headquarters, prison 9-1. Commandant speaking.
This is the Department of the Interior. Colonel Novotny, Commandant.
Oh, yes, sir.
How many political prisoners do you have in Department B?
One moment, sir. I will check. We have 7, sir.
Very well. I want them transferred. They are to be transferred to the camp at Klokovitz. I shall dispatch a wagon to remove them.
Yes, sir. We will have the prisoners ready.
I want them moved after dark for reasons of security.
After dark, sir. Just as you say.
Stand by. Wagon is on its way.
prisoners, you will step into the wagon. No talking. Step inside and sit down. You have the colonel's orders, driver?
Yes, commandant. Here.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You prisoners, if you attempt to leave this wagon, I will shoot instantly and without challenge.
Fine. Lock them in and take them away.
Yes, commandant. Mila Sloboda, come here to the opening. Well, nice to see you again, Mila.
Fantastic. You are the
driver. Quiet. Wait till we are off the ground. It's not a word.
Stop! Let me see your orders.
Certainly. The commandant just approved them.
Nevertheless, I cannot take your word for it. You cannot pass this gate unless I see them.
Mm-hmm.
Very well. Pass.
Talk back there now.
Handicap, what is this? What are you doing?
I telephoned the commandant, a fake call. We forged orders to remove you to another prison. Stole the wagon and my uniform. Now, I will stop in a moment. I will open the lock at the back door. I will talk to the patrol. If it goes well, do nothing. But if I believe we are in danger, I will say, this is on orders from Colonel Novotny. Repeat that to me.
This is on orders from Colonel Novotny.
That is the signal. When you hear those words, throw open the door and run for your lives. They will be firing at you. Do not run in a group. That way one or two of you may make it.
But you, Fantacek, they will surely kill you at the wheel.
Mila, darling, Fantacek stopped worrying about being killed many, many years ago. Minutes more, Mila. Sun is coming up. You see it?
You have been driving all night, Fantacek. You must be exhausted. Are we near the river yet?
Yes. You understand what to do when you reach the banks of it.
I do.
This is the spot I've been worried about, this bridge. There's a patrol stationed here. There will be an inspection.
Your papers?
Here, my orders. I'm transferring these political prisoners to the camp at Hlokovit.
Let me see the order.
May we pass?
Not yet.
Why not?
I must telephone Prague. I must check. I must be sure the colonel issued these instructions. It's rest routine. But there are tricks that have been tried. Over here, my booth.
You can see for yourself these are special orders. He will be very angry with you. He gave the orders to me himself, I can assure you.
Yes, but I must speak with him nevertheless. I will catch it for not observing the routine. It will only take a minute.
But I'm telling you that you're foolish to do this. It is not necessary.
Why don't you want me to make this call?
I don't care for myself. I'm just saving time and bother for you.
Now wait here. Prague, 26790. Colonel Novotny's office. Colonel Novotny's office. This is the patrol booth at Rasik Bridge. The secret police wagon is here with political prisoners from Prison 9-1. Special orders to transfer them signed by the colonel. I see. Yes. Yes, there it is.
Well, what did he say? May we pass?
You have a match?
Yes, yes, here in my pocket. Here you are.
Thank you.
I said, may we pass?
The colonel is not at his office. No one of the staff is there. It's too early in the morning. The officer on duty answered the phone.
I will shift the call back.
You will not ask us to wait, will you? I've shown the signed orders to you. Now, look. I must return to Prague confidentially. There's a young lady waiting for me back in Prague. You understand, eh?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, I see you're smoking those miserable cigarettes. Here, I have a pack of Egyptian cigarettes. Take it. And there's one poor suffering civil servant to another. Let me do my job in peace. Oh. I must not be late. Now, go on. Oh, take the cigarettes. We pass now, eh?
All right, go on.
A few bad moments, eh, Mila?
Oh, my Jesus. Stay at Factory, Fantasy.
Not much more to the river now.
Stop!
Oh, now what?
The padlock! The chains! They're off!
Really?
Get out! You fix it! I am covering the prisoners with my rifle.
How could that have happened? Perhaps the commandant of the prison did not adjust it properly. I will take care of it.
Now I cannot allow the wagon to continue until I talk to headquarters. There must be an inquiry.
I will take care of everything.
Why didn't you knock him out?
I had to, Miller. He meant it this time. He'd have detained us. I'll turn off my light. I have the accelerator on the floor. That's the alarm. They'll be after us.
Where are you going?
Just a bit more along the river. That spot. Oh, that car, they're on the road after us, coming this way. Now listen to me. I shall make the next turn very sharply, and I will stop. The minute I slow down, throw open the door and run to the river. One oak tree stands by the river. That is the spot. You know what to do when you get there. Ready?
Ready.
I may never see you again, Mila. Good luck.
Take care of yourself, Andicek. Take care.
They see us. Keep down. Open the door now. Run. Run to the river. Mila, run, child.
Goodbye, Andicek. God bless you.
Here they come. I'll take care of some of them. To the river! To the river!
The old man's dead. How many prisoners have we?
We got four. Three made it to the river.
You see them swimming?
No. Look! Clothing. Floating on the river. We fired a lot of shots that way. I think we hit them all.
Good. We will report that none of them escaped. We will report that they drowned.
They did escape, though. They did not drown. Although she was officially reported dead, and her parents and relatives believed the report, the girl we are calling Mila Svoboda escaped across the Danube. She is alive and well. She has just reached the United States. I wish to repeat that we are using fictitious names to prevent retaliation against this girl's relatives or friends who are still behind the Iron Curtain in Czechoslovakia. But the girl we are calling Mila Svoboda survived and reached Austria. Finally, she reached our own shores.
This is Admiral Zacharias again. Standing at a microphone in our secret mission studio is the real Mila Svoboda, to reveal herself, the amazing climax to the story of the escape you have just heard. Welcome to Secret Missions, Mila, and please tell us what happened after you disappeared into the water.
My escape was made possible, Admiral, thanks to my fiancé. He remembered that in the recent war, the Russians used to cross rivers in a special secret way. It was a way of crossing which made them invisible to the Germans. He instructed the men who were helping me to escape to use that method. It was a rope bridge, but it was a rope bridge under the water. It consisted of three ropes, one guide and support our feet, two others for our hands. At a certain point where the Danube River separates Czechoslovakia from Austria, the men built this underwater rope bridge that took us to safety. We were lucky that we were able to reach the point on the river where the rope bridge began. The men who followed us must have been convinced that we were all drowned, especially when they saw hats and pieces of our clothes drifting on the water. We released those things to create the impression that we had drowned.
I want to congratulate you, Mila, on your remarkable escape. Also, on your recent marriage to the young American whose devotion you so fully deserve. We are very happy to present your case on secret missions. There are thousands like you, Mila, who are escaping from their countries of birth because they cannot endure the oppression which is common practice in the countries behind the Iron Curtain. And this mass migration presents an urgent problem to the peacetime intelligence services of the Western powers. Services such as the ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Secret Missions on Tuned to Yesterday from March 6, 1949 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. It's an hour of true history. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now the Cavalcade of America from August 23, 1943 on the NBC Red Network. It's the story of the invention of sulfa drugs, featuring Carl Swenson, Everett Sloan, Bud Collier, and Edmund Lowe in the Arthur Arendt story, The Weapon That Saves Lives.
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Edmund Lowe in The Weapon That Saves Lives, a story of the sulfa drugs.
My name is Aureolus Theophrastus von Hohenheim. I was born in 1493 and will die in 1541. François Rabelais is my contemporary and Martin Luther. You will come to know me in future generations as Paracelsus, the great physician. I'm dedicating these brief 48 years of my stay on this planet to one great cause, the freeing of medicine from the fetters of 1400 years of corruption and superstition. It shall be my task to convert to man's good usage the things of the earth, that they may cure him in his bed of pain, seeking out his ills and destroying them, the better to prolong his corporeal existence in health before Almighty God.
Listener, have you ever stopped to consider the miracle of coincidence? You, madam, how did you happen to meet your husband? Why were you there that day when he turned up? You could very well have been someplace else. And you, sir, how did you happen to get started on your career? What accident set you along the path you've been following all these years? Yes, the history of life and death is full of coincidences. Life and death, coincidences. And now to business. There is, as you know, a mineral dug out of the earth that men call coal, C-O-A-L. Listener, visualize a lump of coal. Regard its unpretentious exterior. And then consider with me the strange chain of coincidence that from this black diamond dug out of the earth's bowels produces one of the most potent destroyers of disease in all medical science, sulfanilamide. Sulfanilamide. It all began in the year 1856 when two men talked things over at the Royal College of Chemistry in London, England.
Perkin. Perkin? William Henry Perkin.
Yes, Professor Hoffman.
Going home for your Easter holiday, William?
Yes, Professor. To work. I have a laboratory at home, you know.
What are you going to work on?
Oh, I don't know. Anything that strikes my fancy, just so long as it's chemistry.
William, why not put your holiday to real use by going after something specific?
Such as
quinine.
Quinine? But that comes from bark, Peruvian bark, as I remember. You were thinking of creating it synthetically?
Exactly. Remember Paracelsus, my boy? He made laudanum, sulfur, arsenic, and mercury, all a part of the medical pharmacopoeia. He cured through chemistry. Let us try to do likewise.
Quinine, eh? And what did you have in mind to produce it from?
Coal tar.
Coal tar? That stinking, nauseating mess.
Exactly, William. That stinking, nauseating mess.
And William Henry Perkin went home on that Easter holiday in 1856, home to the makeshift laboratory he's been puttering around in ever since he could remember.
William, that stuff smells.
I know it, sister.
What is it?
It's coal tar.
And what's that one?
It's a derivative.
Oh, what's a derivative?
It's one of the chemicals that make up the coal tar. Now keep quiet and watch. If this turns white, maybe I've got something.
Why does it...
Quiet now, quiet.
It's black. It's turning black.
So it is. Let's see. I've tried toluidine with potassium dichromate. I've tried sulfate. Oh, Alice, didn't I tell you never to touch that test tube? Now look what you've done.
Well, look at my dress.
No.
Look at it. It's purple.
It serves you right. Next time you'll know... Did you say purple? Here, let me take a look at that.
My stockings, they're purple, too. And my shoes. William, my shoes.
That's very strange. Very strange. Now, I wonder why it turned purple.
Within a week, William Henry Perkin found out why it turned purple. The coal tar derivative he'd used on that last experiment was aniline. And this 18-year-old boy thus became the discoverer of the first of the famous aniline dyes. Their beauty and inexpensiveness revolutionized an industry. But the aim of the great Paracelsus, to cure human ills through chemistry, went down, scuttled, a lost cause in the mad stampede that followed Perkin's discovery.
It would take 100 years to break down all the secrets in coal tar. The possibilities and combinations are limitless. I advise you young men to study it. Get to know it. Experiment. Experiment. Experiment.
Professor, I've just found something. Taste it. It's sweet.
Saccharin from coal tar.
Maria, come here. It doesn't look like anything, but it smells beautiful.
Perfume from coal tar. And here we pause for a moment over one of the strangest, most ironic episodes in the long saga of chemical experimentation. The scene is the university in Vienna, the year 1908.
Professor, my name is Gelmo.
I know you, Herr Gelmo. State your business, please.
I know how busy you are. It's about my thesis.
You want to know if you passed. If you will be getting your doctor's degree next week.
Well, yes, but...
You have passed.
Thank you, sir, but if it isn't too much trouble, I'd like to discuss with
discuss,
you...
Discuss? I have no time for discussion.
Professor, did you read it?
I read it. Para-aminobenzene sulfonamide. Very interesting.
Is that all?
Another coal tar derivative, another dye. One more added to the many. It is no miracle you have produced, Gelmo.
No, Herr Professor.
I advise you to forget it. Go on to other things.
Yes, Herr Professor.
I assure you, the world will never be shaken to its foundations by a compound named para-aminobenzene sulfonamide. But nobody can even pronounce it. Para-aminobenzene sulfonamide.
Poor Gelmo, probably no student in all medical history ever contributed so much in exchange for a doctorate. And this compound, this aminobenzene sulfonamide, went into the limbo of forgotten things. P. Gelmo. Nobody knows what became of him. They don't even know what his first name was. Only the initial P remains. An ironic monument to the memory of the little Viennese medical student who first produced the miracle drug, sulfonylamide. But science moves forward, and in 1910, another man appeared. This one was driven by a fierce urge to root out and destroy the deadly spirochete, the cause of one of man's most fearsome diseases.
My name is Paul Ehrlich. I have been conducting a series of experiments with chemical agents against spirilla in the human body.
Salvarsan 606, the magic bullet.
This Salvarsan has proved successful in the destruction of the spirilla forms in syphilis. It marks a great step forward in the new science of chemotherapy.
Paul Ehrlich died at the beginning of the First World War, but his Salvarsan, his magic bullet, survived to cheat death, to make sick men whole again through chemotherapy. In the year 1932, there lived in Germany a certain Dr. Gerhard Domack, director of the Institute of Experimental Pathology at Elberfeld. It was his notion to take up the sword laid down by Ehrlich. Among the compounds he tested was a coal tar derivative called Prontosil. One day, as he bent over the contents of a test tube in his laboratory...
I know I am on the right track. I know it.
But yet, perhaps the doctor would be the better for a vacation.
Oh, I have no time for vacations, Joseph. Besides, my daughter is sick. Blood poisoning. I couldn't leave her.
Oh, so I had forgotten.
Joseph, I want to talk to you. Don't answer me. Don't pay any attention to what I'm saying. Just listen.
Yeah, Herr Doctor.
Joseph Ehrlich was right. He was right, wasn't he? You can answer yes or no.
He was right, Herr Doctor.
He proved it was Salvarsan, didn't he? Didn't he?
Yeah, he proved it, Herr Doctor.
And it stands to reason that if there's a chemical compound that kills Spirilla, there must be another one to kill Bacilli.
It stands to reason, Herr Doctor.
Joseph, this coal tar derivative, this Prontosil I've been working with, it does strange things. It kills bacteria, Joseph. Have you noticed it?
I have noticed it.
It kills bacteria in the body of a rat, but not in a test tube. But Salvarsan will work even in an old shoe. Somewhere there is a mistake. And it is not with Ehrlich. It is with Domack. What are you laughing at?
Well, perhaps you are only putting them to sleep, Herr Doctor. You know, like Ehrlich with the strepanosome.
Putting
the...
Donnerwetter!
Oh, excuse it, please, if I have said something.
Ehrlich, his early theory of atrophy. Recite it to me, Joseph, and slowly, please.
Atrophy is the theory that bacteria are caused to starve in the midst of plenty. The chemical agent introduced does not kill the bacteria, but renders them static.
That's it. Static. Sleeping, unable to multiply. Proceed.
This being the case, they cannot for any length of time remain alive in the body. For then the body's own defensive forces, the white blood cells, kill them off down to the last one.
And there are no white blood cells in a test tube. Excellent, Joseph, excellent. We have made great progress today.
All through the night, the lights burned brightly in Herr Dr. Domack's laboratory. And then early the next morning, as he was about to throw himself on the cot, red-eyed and exhausted, the door opened. It was Joseph.
Hey, Dr. Domack.
Eh? What is it?
I have bad news. Your daughter...
Holy God, I had forgotten. Tell me, Joseph.
She is very bad, Herr Doctor. The blood poisoning has spread through the whole arm.
Oh, help me, Joseph. Find my shoes, my hat. I must go to her at once. Holy God. And all from the prick of a sewing needle.
Yeah, but you must hurry, Herr Doctor.
If what?
If you wish to be there in time.
If I wish to? You mean they have given her up? The experts? The specialists? Well, stop looking at your feet and answer me.
It is blood poisoning.
Blood poisoning? Blood poisoning? Joseph, those tubes on the table, cork them carefully, put them in my bag. Also a hypodermic. Hurry! Blood poisoning. What is blood poisoning but the presence of bacteria in a human body?
You mean you're going to inject your own daughter with an untried drug?
Untried? I've tried it on 1,000 mice and rats and guinea pigs. The experts have given her up, haven't they? There's no cure known to medicine, they say. Very well. They've had their day in court. Now that everything else has failed, let's give chemotherapy a chance.
Herr Dr. Domack's daughter was duly injected with Prontosil, a derivative of that stinking, nauseating mess, coal tar, and she duly recovered. And in 1939, Herr Dr. Gerhard Domack was awarded the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine. Of course, he wasn't permitted to accept it. Prontosil saves human lives, and that is contrary to the philosophy of a man named Hitler.
You are listening to The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont. Our play, The Weapon That Saves Lives, stars Edmund Lowe as narrator. As our story continues, science is about to take its last step in the search for a substance that will destroy bacteria in the human body.
One more step and the cycle is complete. Prontosil is primarily a dye, a chemical compound. The curative power must reside in some small fragment of this complicated structure. So the men of science went to work. And then one day in Paris, Monsieur and Madame Trefoil, working together, announced they had solved the mystery of what in Prontosil destroys bacteria. It was a compound called para-aminobenzene sulfonamide. Listener, does that name strike a familiar note? Or have you forgotten a little Viennese student named Gelmo? It took 27 years of painstaking experimentation, of research and medical progress by scientists of several nations to work backward to the full understanding of his legacy. Coincidence? Of course. The magic world sulfonylamide spread throughout the world, in England, in Germany, in France, and in America. Doctors made use of its extraordinary power to destroy the deadly bacteria of
meningitis, mastoiditis,
but not pneumonia,
scarlet fever, peritonitis, childbed fever,
but not pneumonia,
strep throat, trachoma, gonorrhea.
Why not pneumonia? It's caused by the same type of bacteria. Why not pneumonia? Let me see now. If we were to alter the sulfonylamide molecule by adding hydrogen atoms...
And carbon, Doctor. Let's try carbon with one atom of nitrogen. Why? Well, that's pyridine.
That's what it is, Doctor. And that's what we'll call it. Sulfapyridine, or pneumonia.
Thus far, gentlemen, we have tried and tested sulfonylamide, sulfapyridine, and sulfathiazole. I now wish to call your attention to a new derivative, sulfadiazine. The incidence of nausea is only 12%, the lowest in the entire sulfur family.
Sulfadiazine, perfected by an American, Dr. R. O. Roblin, Jr. And now for the final chapter, we look in on Johns Hopkins Medical School in Baltimore. Dr. E. K. Marshall, Jr. and his associates are at work on another sulfur derivative, sulfaguanidine.
Well, it shows high activity against streptococcus and pneumonia infections. But it has one fault, gentlemen. It is very poorly absorbed in the intestinal tract. It lingers there. It doesn't pass out of the system. I propose to forget it, to put it on the shelf. Perhaps someday it may prove... Pardon me. Yes?
This is the Department of Health, Huntington, West Virginia.
Yes?
There's an epidemic broke out in here. Bacillary dysentery. And we need help.
How many cases?
Well, almost 50. We're given the usual treatment, but doesn't seem
You're
to help.
You're not short of doctors, are you?
No, it isn't that. We thought maybe you fellas up there at Johns Hopkins had something that could be used
to... There's nothing new been discovered lately that can be used to... Wait a minute. Did you say bacillary dysentery?
That's what I said. Right in the intestinal tract.
Well, hold everything, Doctor. I'm coming right over.
And thus the cycle is complete. Paracelsus said that chemistry could be used in the treatment of disease. William Henry Perkin, 300 years later, tried to prove he was right. And through the medium of coal tar, discovered aniline dyes. A Viennese student named Gelmo then produced sulfonylamide as an improved coloring matter, not knowing the miracle he had wrought. Then Dr. Domack accomplished what Perkin had set out to do almost 100 years before. And finally, the Trefoils in Paris in 1935 isolated sulfonylamide. The discovery of Gelmo in 1908. Coincidence? Of course. And now, 1943, a foxhole on Guadalcanal.
Keep your head down, Red. That chap's still up there in that tree.
I ain't worrying about him. I got something else on my mind.
Like what, for instance?
Like that mortar they got dragging the other side of the hill. Ought to have it set up by now.
Uh-huh. And then?
And then, Chum, they're going to start lobbing them over at us. Crump, crump, crump. Slow and regular. Just like that. Till they find the range.
We better be getting out of here.
Kid, you ain't so bright for a Marine. How many trees can you count from here?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9.
Right. Each one with a little monkey all waiting to let you have it in the gut. That sulfanilamide won't help you if you get it in the gut, chum. Ain't nothing can help you if you get it in the gut. Well, not bad for the first one. Next one will be about 10 feet closer.
How can you sit there and wait for it like this?
What else I gotta do? Go to a movie? Keep your drawers on, Tommy. What did I tell you? Boy, can I call him. 10 feet. Yeah, this one's gonna be it, kid. Right in the corner pocket. Maybe we'd be lucky, and maybe. And when it lands, holler. Holler even if you ain't hit.
Well, why should I do that?
Yeah, monkeys in the trees will fire off their guns as a signal, and maybe we'll be left in peace till it's dark and we can beat it.
What makes you think them snipers won't come down and finish us off?
Why should they? They're happy up there in the trees with them coconuts. Now, remember when you hear it yell. Well, Chum, I was pleased to have met you.
Yeah, me too, Red. And if I ever live to get out of this, why, I'll...
Hey, kid. Oh. I got it.
Red.
Yeah, nice going, kid. Only I really got it. In the leg. How about you? I said... Kid. Right in the corner pocket, all right. Well, Red, you're all alone now. Keep your brains working. All depends on you. Now stop a minute. Take your dirty hand off that leg. Think. You gotta think or you're sunk. Now, let's see now. What do regulations say? When no help is at hand, take out the box of sulfanilamide tablets and eat 2. Okay. So I'm eating them. Now, what next? Sprinkle the powder on the open wound. Okay, so I'm sprinkling it. You lie quiet and don't move. How can I move with his leg? I didn't have to remember that one. And now what? Nothing, I guess. Boy, what I wouldn't give for a little snooze. Ah, don't worry, Red, you'll be okay. Everybody says the sulfanilamide stuff is the nuts. I wonder how they come to invent it. Stupid question. Guess I'm getting sleepy. How'd they come to invent anything? Guy gets up one morning, and the first thing he knows, he's invented something. Just like that. That's the way it is, sure. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, you're still on a beam, Red. It's the same. I'd like to know who that guy was that invented it. I'd like to tell him thanks. I'd like to tell him...
My name is Trefwell. Together with my wife, I isolated sulfanilamide from the chemical compound Prontosil.
Herr Dr. Domack, I used Prontosil chemotherapeutically to destroy bacteria.
Paul Ehrlich is the name. I invented chemotherapy.
P. Germo speaking. I discovered sulfanilamide out of coal tar.
William Henry Perkin. I brought coal tar to the attention of the world by producing aniline dyes from it.
My name is Aureolus Theophrastus von Hohenheim. You will come to know me in future generations as Paracelsus, the great physician. It shall be my task to convert to man's good usage the things of the earth, that they may cure him in his bed of pain, seeking out his ills and destroying them, the better to prolong his corporeal existence before Almighty God.
Here is Edmund Lowe, star of this evening's cavalcade.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And now it's my special privilege this evening to introduce to the audience of the Cavalcade of America the Deputy Surgeon General of the Army of the United States, Brigadier General George F. Lowe.
It has been a pleasure tonight to listen to this drama of the work of the sulfa drugs in combating infections. Many of these infections, even 4 or 5 years ago, were labeled incurable. We have come a long way in a few years, but there is still much to be done. One of the biggest jobs ahead, and I mean in the immediate months ahead, is that of ensuring proper medical care for our men in the armed forces. We cannot, and we will not, allow a single American soldier to die for lack of medical attention. That is a big job, and we are doing everything humanly possible to ease pain and prevent death. Today we face death in many forms on battlefields throughout the world. We need now, not tomorrow or next month or next year, but now, 9,000 more physicians and surgeons in the Army. Men who will put service above self. Men who will sacrifice a part of their lives or even their lives to offer their skill where it is needed most, on the battle lines to restore broken and torn and burned bodies. They are just as vitally needed behind the battle lines to keep our fighting force the efficient, dominating organization it is today. Your Army needs medical men more than it has ever needed them before. It is no exaggeration to say that we can lose this war without them. However, I am confident America's doctors will meet this challenge.
Thank you, General Love.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday from August 23, 1943 on the NBC Red Network. And that wraps up this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.